to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
If there were ETs coming here in ancient times, they seem to have lost interest in us until 1947. Then, suddenly, around the world, people of all kinds began to report seeing them in the skies above. Some claim to have photographed them. In the United States, the government dismissed the phenomena. They described the mysterious objects as weather balloons, hoaxes, swamp gas, and other scientific anomalies.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Project White Paper. This is Michael Rambacher, along with the wonderfully beautiful Chase Kletsky, and Jamie's back at the switches again.
Yes,
hey, Jamie. I'm glad. I hope you had a wonderful holiday, and that's going to be absolutely something for you to remember, I'm sure. You didn't have to push the switches. Tonight, everybody, I think you're going to have to not only fasten your seatbelts, you're going to have to hang on to the seats that you're belted into, because we're going to take a trip through the centuries, actually the millenniums, to bring us to where we're going to be next year in 2012. This is going to be one of those shows. It's going to be knock your socks off, and there's no such thing as a dumb question tonight. I guarantee you, no such thing as a dumb question. So with that, I'm going to let Chase introduce our incredible guest that we're having on tonight. And I'm not even mentioning his name. I'm letting you mention it.
We have been excited for quite some time, and contacting this guest and him accepting our invitation was, just a thrill for Michael and I. But this is usually the part in the show where I tell a little something about our guest and reveal a bio. But tonight it's only going to be a little different, because Michael and I are seriously humbled and honored to introduce our very special guest, and feel that only he himself can properly give us the background on his life and his pursuits. So without further delay, everybody, I would like to bring in Will Bluewater and welcome him personally to Project White Paper and Inception Radio Network. Hi, Will. How are you?
Osiono oginali'i, tahiju, tahigu, which in Cherokee means hello, cousins. I'm fine. How are you?
We are great. Thank you so much for accepting our invitation. We're thrilled.
Well, it's an honor. I appreciate being invited.
Well, can you tell us just a little something about your background and kind of introduce yourself a little to our audience?
Well, I suppose everybody would like to know how I get involved with this. In 1970, I was given my Cherokee genealogy by my a cousin of my great uncle, and didn't do much about it at that time. In 1984, an Indian man in a dream, an Indian man sitting at a low table across from me. I didn't know who he was. He just had a round pockmarked face, he simply asked me, "What are you going to do something about Gardner Green's genealogy?" Well, he had a white stone hanging around his neck on a gold chain. His name was written in the stone, but I wasn't allowed to remember his name until at all. And there was a gold key embedded in the stone. And I didn't realize who he was until 1996, until after I had started to finish something that he started. He passed away in 1985, and I guess it was 1985 when I saw him, but I had no idea who he was until 1996. But he was I was always interested in prophecy. My mom was kind of a prophecy buff, and she had, if you were to ask my dad, he would tell you that that she had great intuition, which he counted on all his life. And but I just kind of started collecting prophecies, and when the before the internet, before I got on the internet, I published a 16-page back and front newsletter of all the prophecies I could get a hold of. I was living in Moab, Utah at the time, and I just copied it and gave it out to people. And within 6 months, I just said, "Hey, this is free. If you want to make copies of it, feel free." Within six months, I got a letter from Australia. Somebody wanted to know more, and I also got a letter from, you'll never believe it, Dr. Leo Sprinkle wrote me a letter asking for more. He's the mainstream psychologist at the University of Wyoming that that people know about in investigating UFO abductions. And I've had a lot of UFO experiences of different kinds, and that's kind of where I got started. In 1996, I started gathering up all the prophecies, and I put them up online, and gone through two or three reincarnations, and that website right now is at NativeAmericanProphecy.com. It used to be known as Wovoka.com. But anyway, and then 2003, I guess it was, or, at the behest of John Red Hat, who's a Cherokee elder. He was enrolled both in the United Ketuba Band and the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma. He suggested that I do a podcast. And I guess between that time and maybe 2008, I did, I think, about 110 interviews of elders and apprentices of different elders from different spiritual traditions from all over the world. And I also published four e-books, two of which were prophecy encyclopedias. One was from the Eastern Hemisphere, one was from the Western Hemisphere. So that's kind of what I'm all about.
Wow.
My background, my dad's dad was born in Sweden. His mother was born in what is now Poland, and so it's Prussia then. But my mother's people, mother's people were Cherokee, or mother's father's people were Cherokee, and my mother's people were Powhatan Cherokee. So I'm a descendant of Motuaca, who people know as Pocahontas, through one line, and I'm a descendant of Savanuka, who was the Raven of Choate. He was the war chief and speaker of the Cherokee Nation. And had he lived through the Revolutionary War, because the Chickamauga Cherokees declared war on the United States in 1776, sided with the British. But had he lived, he would have become he would have inherited the seat of the Cherokee Nation. Would have been the Uka of the. There are actually three Cherokee nations: the North, Middle, and Southern Cherokee Nation.
Wow!
And that man, Savanuka, was the carrier of the Ark. The Cherokees had an Ark, had sacred records in it, and that Ark was stolen from us by the Lenape. We understand that they were carried up into Canada, and they're prophesied to return someday. But that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Well, that the real nutshell has got to be the size of Colorado, I think.
it got to be, let's put it this way, it got to be a big subject. I got, you know, I thought it was real cute when I first started, because it had a lot of this kind of corresponded with the death of my first wife, and I started asking for answers to prayer, I think about 1990, and started getting them, and kind of the further along we go, the more I realize it's much more of a burden than it is something that's real cute, if you know what I mean, and I discovered what some people say. You know, sometimes this thing is kind of a curse, because it kind of puts a burden on you, and also gives you a real bad name, because anybody that's involved with the prophecies gets slandered, and including Mad Bear Anderson, and that just kind of goes along with the territory. You know, Red Elk and my other friends, and all of them have been roundly slandered and libeled, but part of the territory.
Yeah, I, you know, you mentioned Mad Bear Anderson. It was phenomenal that, I mean, Chase, when I mentioned that to her in an email, she wrote back, she says, you know, I should be surprised, but I'm not surprised. I actually stood at the man's grave and went through the land that he lived on. I actually did a piece at his house that was actually burned from underneath him, and was in a sweat lodge, and stood in the woods where he used to teach. It was just absolutely phenomenal when I read that you had that connection with that man, and I did this for a series, The Legend Hunters, back in 2006. It's called Myths of the Iroquois. But, you know, what we're going to do tonight, everybody, is I'm going to turn this over, and we're going to start at Pope John Paul, because that's going to be the kicker. And then we're going to go with Joseph Smith. Now, everybody out there should be familiar with those names. One, obviously, was the Pope of the Catholic Church, and the other one is the originator of the Mormon religion. And how this all relates to 2012. And we're going to take a trip through the millennium to the Iroquois elders, the Cherokees, obviously, the Phoenicians, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, all of those, briefly, those ancient civilizations, all coming up with the same scenario. And then we're really going to dig into what everybody knows, and everybody's seen the shows on the History Channel and everywhere else on the Mayan calendar, and what the Hopis really knew, the Hopi Indians. It's going to be an amazing trip for everybody, so just hang on, and we're going to get started with this right now. And I guess we're going to start off with the segment with Pope John Paul. And this actually goes back to the era of the First World War, and we go to Fatima, to where the kids at Fatima actually had the vision, or were visited by the Virgin Mary. And she committed three secrets to the kids, and they were given to the church, and they were not to be opened until a specific date. And John Paul was the reigning pope, but the only problem with that was only really publicly two of the secrets were exposed. And I think Will is going to go through the third one and how that all came, and how that really leads to where we're going in the 2012 thing. Go ahead, Will.
Well, I always knew somehow, you know, the Bible says surely, you know, God speaking, so surely I'll do nothing without revealing it to my servants, the prophets. And, you know, we know the white Europeans know he works in mysterious ways. And so I figured, you know, if some story were out there, more than one person would be telling them. And I knew, you know, what different elders of different traditions had said, but I believe it was back in 1986, there was a group of very faithful Catholics that kind of buttonholed Pope John Paul II about the third secret of Fatima. And basically, and I'll just paraphrase, and it's on the front page of my website at prophecykeepers.com, he just said, well, if I were to tell you that millions would die in the blink of an eye, and entire continents would be overswept by sheets of ice and ocean waves, that wouldn't be something so much to be desired. And if you saw, you know, the movie 2012, that's kind of the idea of what you saw. And Cardinal Ratzinger concurred with this. Later on, now this information came, there's also information that came through Catholic mystics that had something to do with a mysterious star. And this is what the Hopi elders said, you know, going back to Hale Bopp. My friend, the late Dr. Robert Ghostwell, published in one of his books that the Hopi elders had said that 7 years from the time Hale Bopp disappeared, that scientists would discover a star, and they said it would take a telescope to find it. But they called this star Susquehanna, and I have no idea whether I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I didn't even know about that prophecy until about the time I started working with Ghost Wolf on Prophecy Keepers Radio. And the I didn't know about it until the seven-year period was over, which was in early 2003. And so I thought, wow, well, this is really interesting. So I got on the NASA website and discovered that the 2 weeks previous to my looking into it, that a small dwarf, red dwarf star had been discovered 5 light years from Earth, and they weren't even looking for it. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. And of course, there was that year there was a spate of tornado action all over the country, and there's just so much of a coincidence between what the Hopi were saying and what the Catholics and others were saying specifically about a mysterious star and flooding all over the country. Now most people that are raised in the Christian tradition will say, oh, well, you know, God's never going to use flood to destroy the world. Well, that's not what it says in Genesis. What it says is God will never again use flood to destroy all life. So I have to kind of get into our argument with Christians about that, because the tradition is that, you know, it won't be, you know, we're not going to have any more floods. But if you're familiar with the Sumerian tradition, you'll know that might kind of ring true, because supposedly we encountered some kind of a planet that we had several encounters with, and the asteroid belt is the remnants of, I believe, half of our planet, and eventually water was thrown onto the planet. And so apparently it's something cyclical that happens, and Jesus said, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
And and then when the movie 2012 came out, before that, I think going back to 2006, I believe, I contacted Patrick Jarrell. He had just recently put up howtosurvive2012.com, and in email conversations with him, he indicated that he had kind of started with some of the things that I put up on the web, and he had gone with boots on the ground and spoken to indigenous elders in Africa and other places, and they physically took him and showed him just how high the water reached, and it would have reached the equivalent of about 6,000 feet in altitude. And the Hopi had always said, well, they said, we're going to be flooded out all the way up to Third Mesa. Some of them were even building boats, and they said when this happened, they were going to have to get on these boats and go to the Four Corners area and start over again. And at that time, Patrick Jarrell, who has been seen on I guess they were planning a refuge in the Drakensberg Mountains in South Africa, and from what I've seen on TV, they've abandoned that idea, and they're looking on the Iberian Peninsula somewhere up in the mountains in Spain,
right,
in an undisclosed location. But
right.
That's kind of the story. But I emailed him. I told him, I said, you know, well, I said, the Hopi have said that if you're going to need to be inside the Four Sacred Mountain area, And when you draw a line between the Sacred Mountain of the West, which is near, this is San Francisco Peaks near Flagstaff, and Sacred Mountain of the North and South are in southwest Colorado and northwest Utah, and Sacred Mountain of the East is Mont Blanc near Alamosa. That area is a high elevation, and I lived in the San Luis Valley for a year. The valley floor is about 7,700 feet, and it's protected by four mountain passes, and they're all over 10,000 feet. And that area has always been known to be a sacred area. No one ever went to war there. A lot of UFO activity there, and supposedly that is one of the places where Sipapu might have been, which is the place of the Hopi place of emergence, the place that they went to be protected by the ant people during the last four times, I guess it was, that the Earth's been turned over.
Ah, so that's what we're calling next year is the turning over of the Earth.
I interviewed Humboldt's men, and Carlos Barrios talked about the subject, and their attitude was, well, you know, guys like Jan Kalaman and others, you know, they know a few of our glyphs, and they write a lot on the subject, but they said their attitude was that there's nothing written in stone about the date. They said it could happen 15 years, you know, earlier or later. It's just that they know something's going to happen. They just didn't know exactly what. But the final glyph is a vase of water being poured out. So it has something to do with water or, you know, age of Aquarius or flooding of some kind. That's another hint.
Well, you know, here's my take. We know that the scientists have proven that, here I'm jumping a bit, but we're going to the Mayan stuff, that their calendar ends on December 21st next year. We all know that. That's a proven fact. The problem is that goes along with all of that is that we have an alignment coming up, and we're going through the center of the galaxy at that point. Also at the same time, and as much as the scientists don't want to create any uproar by going out there and saying, now this is what's going to happen, I think a lot of them know that we have a liquid core Earth, so it is very susceptible to changes that go on outside the environment. And if we pass through that side and go to the other side of the universe, then technically speaking, the way that I saw it, where here in the United States, all of our weather goes west to east, everything will obviously switch around and go east to west, and the southern hemisphere will switch around and go west to east instead of east to west. And I don't even want to go into the poles flipping around, but that only makes a scientific sense because the pole is going to change.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, the Bible indicates, Elijah indicates that at one time the Earth changed its rotation, that the sun originally rose in the west. And the Hopi say that that our rotation originally was counterclockwise. And the Hopi, the Cherokee, and the Aztec all dance counterclockwise. Old ones believed that anyone that danced clockwise was being contrary, even to the point of even calling them witches. And this is the direction that the ghost dance was danced in. And the ghost dance was taught to the cast and crew of the movie Billy Jack by Andy Vidovich, who was Wovoka's son-in-law and married another descendant of Wovoka. And you can go to originalghostdance.com and you can actually see the way it was danced. It's a spiral dance. And a friend of mine, Robert Three Eagles, told me that he's familiar with physics, and he says if that dance was danced with the center of it on a small hill, the people on the outside, lower in elevation, the people on the inside of the dance, it would actually send an impulse of energy into outer space, which is kind of interesting.
Whoa.
But, yeah, the Hopi elders say that our rotation will go back to what it was originally, which is counterclockwise.
Well, the science is already showing, too, that the sun...
Go ahead, Chase.
Okay. Scientists have proven that the sun and the Earth are losing magnetic fields as the Earth rotation slows and base resident frequency is increasing. I mean, that just... there's just no two ways about it.
Yeah,
period.
The frequency. Yep, that's true.
Exactly. That's the thing. I know that, you know, the American Indians, thank goodness, but have really saved a lot of their traditions. And a lot of the stories come down in an oral form. But there was a man who, you know, claimed that, you know, he saw a vision and an angel visited him named Moroni. And Moroni claimed to be from Pleiades. And, you know, of course, I'm talking about Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon religion. And he had I want to say peculiar almost, because it was such a genuine love and a true fondness for Native Americans. And I know they shared a lot of information back and forth. Is there any correlation between some of this? Because the Mormons also, back in the early 1800s, named... you know, a planet that's the closest to where God lives. It's called Koa.
Koa.
I mean, there's, yes, and the...
Absolutely, yeah. Well, there's a prophecy that the Pleiades will at some point return to its original configuration of a six-pointed star. But Joseph Smith was, and he wasn't the only one, but he was influenced by a man by the name of Mordecai Noach, N-O-A-C-H, who was he was a captain of militia and a very politically influential man in Tammany Hall in New York City. Noach was a Jew, and he published plans for the establishment of a colony in the St. Lawrence Seaway, and he was going to call it Ararat, as I recall, and he wanted it as a homeland for Jews and Native Americans because he was convinced that they were related. And he wrote a couple of theses on the subject, and I've done a voiceover of one of them. But he released that information 5 years before Joseph Smith even started talking about it. Joseph Smith lived within 5 or 10 miles of the place where Handsome Lake, who's the author of The Good News of Religion, had his a vision. He was in a coma for several weeks or months, I can't remember. I believe he was influenced by those stories. If not influenced, he was at least, you know, introduced to them. But in 1803, Handsome Lake related the story of how in his vision he encountered three men, Indian men, walking toward him with an elderberry branch in one hand and a bow in the other. They walked on a cushion of air, and they said that they worked for another man who was in Creator's land at that time, and he later met that person, and that person looked white to him, didn't look like an Indian. Well, Joseph Smith was told that that person was John the Revelator, who was rumored to have... not tasted death, in other words, been translated. And the Book of Mormon talks about how three of the disciples here in the Americas, the disciples of Jesus, they were, the 12 here in the Americas were given the opportunity to choose whether to go into death or to tarry until the return of the Messiah, and three of them chose to stay. So, yeah, there's a definite correlation, and there's stories. Used to be they were seen by a lot of people in a lot of different places, but as the Mormon Church has kind of lost a lot of its spirituality, there are fewer and fewer sightings of these men that are referred to as the three Nephites.
Right.
But, yeah, there's a definite correlation.
the correlation to prophecy is that profound, you know, with the Catholics and the Mormons, which, you know, we know historically as even non-religion theologians study, you know, what they consider, you know, how Jesus.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, in Mormon lore, you're going to be David Patton. David W. Patton was one of Joseph Smith's 12 apostles, and he met Cain. Says he met a man who introduced himself as Cain, who was about 9 feet tall. Patton was riding a horse at the time, so his eyes would have been about 9 feet, 8 or 9 feet off the ground. And he said this person that strode up to him, long hair all over his body, smelled the high heavens, and, you know, dark skin.
The first Bigfoot sighting.
You know, and of course the Hebrew curse, you know, of Ham, was it this person that discovered Noah's nakedness was cursed to have a red eyes and a twisted mouth, and of course Cain's posterity were cursed that they would be vagabonds in the land and supposedly never be killed. Well, you know, no one's ever found one, the body of one, and if you put in the words red eyes and Sasquatch, you'll find out about 80% of encounters that involve Sasquatch are reported to have, you know, red glowing eyes.
Right.
And
it was his
punishment
for killing Abel and lying to God, so he wouldn't let him die and was forced to live.
Yeah, somehow the two. I don't know how that worked out, but it's just another indication. I've done a lot of, you know, studying in Hebrew lore the last few years, and have some good friends that are rabbis that I bounce things off of, and one of them is Rabbi Lazer Brody, and another rabbi who doesn't wish to be named because he's, but he's also a good friend. I interviewed him back in 2004 because he was associated with the Sanhedrin, which is being formed up again. But I do have access to, and have studied the Torah and those other traditions. And one rabbi in Calder, Foster, Rabbi Calder Foster in Shreveport, when I was showing him the correlations between the Cherokee language and Hebrew, he was just stunned, and he says, "Man, you ought to take that act on the road. You ought to just go around and talk at all the synagogues." But John Red Hat was born and raised in the old Cherokee religion, and he converted to in the 1940s to Judaism and became a rabbi. And Rabbi Foster knew him because they were both Air Force officers, and so there's a correlation there also. But John Red Hat. The last three Kikmongli or village chiefs at Oraibi, or Oraibi is the oldest inhabited town in North America, and the Hopi prophecy revolves around Oraibi. But John Lanza, Vino Lanza, and Chief Mike all recognized that John Red Hat had fulfilled every prophecy having to do with the return of the True White Brother, other than the return of the Sun Clan Tablet. So, and the Hopi have always said that they were from the Middle East. One of my first traditional teachers was Zula Brinkerhoff, who's a mixed blood Cherokee. She was the author of God's Chosen People in America, which is all about how similar the Hopi are to the in their dwellings and language. Robert Morningsky. Published the similarities between the Hopi language and the Sumerian language. So, Thomas, I'll think of his last name in a minute. I interviewed him. He wrote a book called The Truth. And his mother, because of her kindness, when the Hopi didn't have a nickel, and they got some money from the government to build a cultural center, but Thomas wrote a book called The Truth, and his mother was given the opportunity to run the cultural center, and he was raised being taken out on the roof at night and was told a lot of things, you know, by the Hopi elders. Like, if you'll notice, he was told that they're the only animal symbols on the Giza Plateau directly correspond to the animal symbols that are important to the Hopi religion.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluehour speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
And
no such thing as coincidence there.
Yeah. And the I know Cherokee clan chiefs that were told that when Egyptian artifacts started coming out of the ground in southern Illinois, that they were to stand up and say that the Cherokee were related to Israel. In 1984, the Ketua Society, which is the organization that held the sovereignty for the Cherokee Nation after it was after the Dawes enrollment period, the Cherokee were dismembered. They didn't have a running government, but when they did become federally recognized in 1949, it was the Ketua that had that sovereignty. But those elders in 1984, and it took a tie-break vote of Chief William Smith, because some of the elders didn't want to bring out the wampum belts and explain. But Bill Jones from KJRH TV did a video that came out in 1984 where Chief Smith explains the wampum belts, and he just says, he's looking at the Cherokee syllabary, and he says, that says that we're Israel Salmers. And you can see that video at KetuaSociety.org, and we've got that up online. So, yeah, there's just all kinds of, and then we've got, rabbis like Rabbi Eliezer Brody and others. There's all kinds of rabbis that are looking for descendants of the Northern Kingdom of Israel and other portions of descendants of Abraham. Looking for them actively for many years. And John Red had pointed out that the Cherokee is the Creek Indian word for us, which means people of the cave country. But we call ourselves Aniuya or Anikitua. In the original Cherokee dialect, which is now dead, the W sound would have been an R, so we would have been Ani Keturah, and Keturah was the third wife of Abraham, and she had two sons, and when Abraham sent them away, he blessed them to be skilled in herbalism and shamanism. And in Hebrew, the word for people or nation is Ami, and in Cherokee it's Ani, so, we're somehow tied in with Abraham's descendants. This would have been, 1,000 years or more before the Sinai Covenant. There's all kinds of things pointing that way.
Wow. You know what we're going to do? We're going to take a quick break, give everybody a chance to take a breath here, and then we're going to come back and, well, if it's all right with you, let's get into the Mayan calendar,
sure.
the whole understanding of what's behind that, why the calendar ends when it ends, and why these other civilizations throughout the millennium have actually come up with the exact same thing, and how that's even conceivable. So we're going to take a quick break, everybody, and then we'll be all right back to Project White Paper.
Welcome back, everybody. We got some fun stuff to listen to, obviously. The music's rocking, and absolutely the information is priceless. What we're going to do now is we're going to start tying in and kind of get into the juicy stuff, the heart and soul of the topic tonight, and really want to basically just ask Blue Water to just start where we can start tying this all together to 2012 and the Mayan calendar and the agreement of, you know, all these religions, prophecies, writings, shoots, even oracles. They're all saying the same thing. So can you help us with that, Blue Water?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I may sound like a true believer, but I'm a skeptic. My dad was a professional engineer. My uncle, was a Navy captain engineer too. So I was raised to have an inquiring mind, but an organized one. I believe in being open-minded. So, you know, I'm not one of these woo-woo people. And sometimes I kind of make fun of New Agers, but that being said, let's go to the hard science. Now, I don't know if you guys know who Dr. Michio Kaku is, but he's a lot of people say that he is the successor in interest to Albert Einstein, and he went on Fox TV not too long ago, and you can see the clip. It's front page of prophecykeepers.com. It'll open up automatically, but he basically said, hey, you know, we scientists made a huge error in mathematics to the 20th I can't remember what words he used, but he says we made a big mistake in the math, and he said sometime around 2012 there could be a repeat of the 1859 Carrington event, which was a disturbance of the sun that completely burned out the telegraph system all over this country and Europe, caused fires, and
right.
He said this thing could take down the grid. If it takes down the grid, it might be 10 years, it might be never before we get the grid back up, because we're not even manufacturing electrical transformers in this country.
Because I'm hoping we end up with free energy, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, that'd be nice. But if you saw the TV series Jericho, you could see what kind of trouble we'd be gargling on that one.
Absolutely.
years ago, Gordon Michael Scallion and others, you know, in their visions, they saw that we would end up being taken back to a time where we lived in small agricultural communities, and there wouldn't be much use for money. And this is kind of what Edgar Cayce said would happen. And he said that the light of the world would come out of Russia. He says not that form of capitalism is being practiced, but being a staunch constitutional Tea Party conservative doesn't mean that I can't cross the gap and agree with Michael Moore when he says that co-ops are, you know, if you saw his show Capitalism, a Love Story, you realize a lot of some of those businesses up in Detroit are being bought up by the employees, and they're breathing life back into them. And this was the system right. that the Japanese used after World War II that was taught to them by an American, I forget his name, but my dad knew him. And they used that successfully to surpass us and eclipse us very quickly. And it's just the cooperative attitude of working together. The Cherokee call it garugi. The Jews just call it community. But I believe that's the way we're headed.
So Will, how do we, going into next year, I know I've noticed changes for probably 10, 11 years just with intensity of sunlight, with obvious weather stuff. I used to do stuff with the National Weather Service, so I had a lot of access. I had access to records. And, you know, I was visually, when I had time, being able to go through things, and I could see the wrapping up. And then all of a sudden the 2012 thing came into everybody's consciousness, and then I started trying to put two and two together, and unfortunately it was coming up to four. And I didn't want to really acknowledge that. And how are we and what are we supposed to look at as far as the ancient prophecies read out with the approach of 2012?
It's pretty simple. One of my guests interviewed a couple of times was a Chumash elder from the Bay Area, California. Her name was Chokosh Alho'o. And spelled Chokosh. You can listen to her interview. When she was a hippie back in the 70s, you know, one of the Hopi prophecies was that the grandchildren of the yellow hair would someday come to them for guidance and wisdom. And speaking of Custer being the yellow hair, and this happened in the late 60s and early 70s. They all gathered around. Zula Bringerhoff introduced me to two people, Robert Three Eagles and Rolling Thunder. John Rolling Thunder Pope was probably the most famous medicine man of the 20th century, and he was a Pink Clan Chickamauga Cherokee. But he built a little community out in Carlin, Nevada, and known as. I'm getting old. I can't remember. But anyway, the hippies gathered out there at this place, and for quite a few years they studied there. And Rolling Thunder's gone now, but his son has established a similar community known as Nanesh Shante out in near Eugene, Oregon. And you can read about that at Nanesh, NANISH.com or .org. But it got to the point where those hippies were actually becoming racist against their own people. So he just said, hey, you know, you're totally missing the point. Go home. But, you know, you got people like Peter Coyote and Bob Dylan and the Grateful Dead that were all fans of Rolling Thunder. But Rolling Thunder are fans of we call him RT. But RT was a very close friend of Mad Bear Anderson, and Mad Bear was a medicine man at Alcatraz during the sit-in, and they were kind of partners in crime, so to speak. But going back to Chokosh Alho'o, she was called back at some point, I believe in the 90s. You could listen to the interview and you could get a better idea, but she had her own children at the time, and she was asked to go back to Hopi because they had a message for her. And she's back for a couple of days, and I think she was at Hope Villa until somebody told her, hey, you know, you're in the wrong place, go on over to Oribe. And she drove over there and in her station wagon, she said just as the sun was coming up and her kids were sleeping in the back, she opened up the door to relieve herself, and
here comes a bunch of elders shuffling around the corner, and they, you know, we got a message for you. And that message is known as the Hopi 10. And you can just Google search the Hopi 10, T-E-N. And they basically gave, they're asking everybody, you know, 10 questions like, you know, what are your, are you in right relationship, you know, with others, with the earth? You know, where is your water? Do you know your garden? And other questions. And,
be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of wisefoods.org. Our native ancestors stored away lots of food in case of emergencies. Thousands of years of sad experience taught them to be prepared. The traditional Hopi stored food enough to last for 7 years. So did the early Mormons. Nowadays, everyone unwisely depends on supermarkets for their food supply, and few people know that there is only a 3-day supply of food in the American food supply chain. Now, should some disaster befall us that would cause the big trucks like I used to drive to cease delivering our food, you'd be in big trouble. It is for these reasons that my family purchased a year's supply of 3 different breakfasts and 10 delicious dinner entrees from wisefoods.org. These foods are freeze-dried right at the field where they are picked and processed and are fresher and more nutritious than any supermarket food. You just add hot water, and they're good for 25 years being stored. A year supply from wisefoods.org fits in an area about 4.5 feet by 4 feet by 18 inches. I can literally get it all in the back seat area of my Honda Civic. If you stay at home, you won't need to go to a FEMA refugee center should some disaster happen. Did you know that David Ramsey, David Gallagher, Laura Ingram, and Michael Medved have also invested in Wise Foods? Why don't you visit wisefoods.org today and see why?
So here, you know, with the with things going south as fast as they can in the economy, I've switched from warning people to, you know, I basically thought I had kind of buried my feather about a year ago, and until I got involved with Chief Joe Sitting Owl with the Central Band of Cherokee. And recently we put up a website at AmericanIndianTeaParty.com because the Cherokee Nation's been spending about $1 million a year trying to suppress the information and the artifacts the Central Band has in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. And then you guys called. And but that's, you know, kind of the way things go. You know, when you're young and you're trying to get pregnant, when you quit trying is when things start happening. So, you know, I'm building, you know, a big garden, and you know, not just enough to feed my wife and I, but, you know, a couple more people. I mean, you can only do what you can do, but I do recommend you people look into square foot gardening because you can, you know, you can get the same a harvest out of, you know, 20% of the space and a lot less water. And but I recommend people get involved with, you know, maybe be, get involved with a sweat lodge someplace and getting in right relationship and with the Earth Mother and start gardening and learning how. The most important thing, at some point I came to realize after trying to make physical preparations and dragging them all over the country, was that, you know, you can't prepare for every possible scenario, and there's a million of them out there. And I've been doing this, the physical preparation stuff, since 1981. And so at some point, you know, I came to realize, you know, in reading scripture, and I believe there's a story in the Book of Mormon about a people that were living under tyranny, and they were told to go to a certain place and hide, you know, by an angel. And so basically, you know, people like me and Red Elk and other people are teaching, look, don't depend on some priest or some minister or whatever. You've got to have a direct relationship with your creator. It sounds easy, but, you know, Red Elk has taught, he told me he's taught 10,000 people how to do it. and maybe four or five have come back and actually said that they've actually made contact with Creator. And it's a lot easier than it sounds, but it just involves, you know, just if when you're praying at night or whenever you're praying, you just need to get quiet, stay awake, and just start listening at what at the musings that come into your mind, and make note of them, write them down, write your dreams down, you know, start to, because, you know, particularly the Torah will tell you that your dreams are actually in a language that can be decoded. The story of Joseph in Egypt is very important, how the world was literally saved from destruction because people started making preparations for 7 years of famine. And so just start paying attention, get a direct connection with the Creator. The big problem, the leap that people need to make is, number one, it can be done because, you know, up until 1998, anybody who said they heard voices was thought to be schizophrenic, but with the new Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 4, recognizes that, you know, people in certain cultures, it's natural for them to hear voices, and people in the psychology profession are looking at that differently. And but, you know, it's our right to have a direct relationship with the Creator. I don't think people are going to get through what's going to be happening unless they do, because unless you've got that inner voice to guide you, and it takes, you know, there's that story in the Bible of the 10 virgins, and you know, 5 were wise and 5 were unwise, and it takes a while to gather the oil.
I have oil in my lamps, baby.
Yeah, you know, I call it a spiritual technology.
That's right.
It's really not anything different from having a ham radio. It's just becoming aware, and number one, recognizing it can be done.
Do you believe that the world, I mean, we're so distracted, and it's purposeful. I believe that the calamities and distractions and drama and, you know, all this stuff, and I don't mean, you know, like little things in our life day to day. I'm talking big world things. I almost believe are orchestrated to keep us distracted from where we need to be.
Absolutely. Yeah, Brigham Young commented, he says, once the curse is lifted from the earth, you know, there won't be any more thorns than thistles. We'll only have to work 3 hours a day to make a living, and all the rest of the time we can use for intellectual pursuits. You know, if there is a devil, he certainly wants to, number one, mystify everything he possibly can.
Right. And everything looks better than what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly. And, yeah, exactly, and to keep us in the dark, feed us, you know, like mushrooms, you know, feed us BS, keep us in the dark, and which is, you know, what the government's doing right now. But
exactly.
But yeah, I'm concerned about what I read. I'm not a person that runs off half cocked, you know, whenever I read certain things. But you know, I am concerned about common elamine.
Right.
Nibiru and these other ideas, because you know, the elders say, you know, these kind of things are going to happen, and it does take some study, and that's one of the reasons why I put my books together, so people get an idea of the tapestry that goes through. It doesn't matter whether you're looking at the Bible or the Book of Mormon or indigenous cultures, you know, they all talk about the 3 days of darkness,
right?
About the rotation of the earth changing. It takes a little bit of study to convince yourself of what our history is, so we don't repeat it.
Exactly. Well, can I ask you about the native spirits and what they believe happened in the afterlife?
Well, there's a lot of different, native religions, but basically, most of them do believe, even if you go into Hasidic studies, you know, there's a reincarnation seems to be a theme that goes through all of it, including old Mormonism. You know, nowadays, you know, you get excommunicated, you talk about, you know, being reincarnated, but Brigham Young called it the baby resurrection.
So yeah, absolutely. It is the next life.
You know, it seems the Celts, you know, believe that all of this knowledge that we gain through all of our lives is our treasure, and that at some point we'll be allowed to remember all the experiences. Now, some Hasidic Jews believe that we can be actually living, as that our personality can be split in as many as 11 or 12 portions, and the Torah talks about that there are 11 curtains between us and Creator, and that that each one of our base personalities could be getting experience at as many as 11 or 12 different planes. And of course, physicists now know that there are that number of dimensions. So science is just
attention.
You'll see the science is verifying the Bible and the Torah. And but
absolutely.
As far as the afterlife, you know, it's a good question. I used to believe, you know, in a physical resurrection. That idea kind of comes from the dry bones vision in the Bible, but the Jews will tell you that probably has more to do with the return of the ten and a half tribes of northern Israel, and them actually being coming back to life and coming back to the land, and then thought to be long dead and long gone. And so I really don't know. Joseph Smith did say that if we're going to go where Creator is, that we're going to have to be in some kind of a body that will withstand temperatures similar to that of inside a sun.
Right.
So, I believe we'll have a lot more refined bodies than we've got now.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
Absolutely. Well, this went by so fast, and this is the time in the show where we open it up to our chat room and our phone lines and answering questions. But we do have the green light if we go over a little, because I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of these questions. So for everybody out there listening, if you'd like to call in and ask Will Bluewater a question, he'll answer everything. And like Michael said, there's no such thing as a stupid question, and this is your opportunity to talk to this fascinating man. So our number is 888-919-2355, or you can put it in a question form in the chat room, and we'll be picking these up and sending these off. That last brilliant question was from Jamie, by the way, about the elders or the spirits.
Well, hi, Jamie. Yeah, glad I can ask that for you. Yeah, I interviewed Ed McGaugh a couple times at MCGAA. He's written 5 books on Lakota spirituality. We've touched on that a time or two in those interviews. And all those interviews are at prophecykeepers.com. So, but, yeah, that seems to be the idea that, you know, we live on. You know, we live forever. And we go through, you know, we'll take on a body and use it for a while and throw it away and get another one and come back. And you know, the problem I see, and I just got into it, got into an argument with the folks on the Mary Summer Rain Yahoo group. I told them, I said, look, somebody had said, well, one of the elders said Mary Summer Rain was nuts. And I said, well, you know, I don't think anybody said Mary Summer Rain was nuts. It's just, there's people you can run into out there that they claim, well, I was this person or I was that person. And, you know, even the Dalai Lama has said, look, you know, we need to stop looking at past lives so much and just live this one, because that life was that life. We came to learn some lesson. And I think people get stuck in the past and they get overly fascinated with, and of course there's all kinds of people out there that are willing to take your money to tell you about your past lives and all this other kind of thing. And I believe people can be a little bit over-fascinated with that. And we need to, sure, it's, you know, it's interesting to know about what you might have been in a past life, but I don't think it should be an obsession, and if that's any help.
Okay. We have questions starting to come in. There was IRN Sonic had a question of, how do you know that we transfer from one body to another?
Well, it's a tradition. What can I say? I mean, it doesn't seem to matter whether you're a Buddhist or a Krishna or a Hebrew or all of the religious traditions talk about this. You know, we don't know how it's done. We seem to understand that we're born, we die, and that spirit somehow ends up in a new body, and we grow and we learn a lesson in another life, and we don't maybe understand the mechanics of it, but you know, all the indications are there that it's just the way Creator works. It's the way that we get. Experience is the most important thing, and we come here to get experience. We come here to be away from Creator so that we can be tested to know whether we'll do the right thing, you know, without Him being around and without that influence.
Right. Or even without the knowledge that we did have before we came here, we had to experience physical bodies to get to the next level.
Exactly. Yeah, it is a matter. It seems to be a matter of progression, and the ultimate goal of which seems to be, I just want more and more responsibility. One of the, I believe Joseph Smith got into trouble when he had a limited understanding of Hebrew, and he started teaching people that they could become gods. And what he had done was he had mistranslated. If you were to go on the Talmud, the Torah, now you'd understand that the word Lord in the Bible can be translated either from Adonai, who is God the Father, or who's a spirit, or Elohim. And the Elohim, and there's an Elohim with a big E, and there's an Elohim with a little E.
Right.
And the rabbis will tell you that the big E Elohim are people like Jesus and these other prophets, and the little E Elohim are people like your mom and dad and your teachers and the cops and the judges and other people. And I'm just interested in getting more and more experience, and I kind of get the feeling that we're moving out. There's lots of room out there in the universe, and there's lots of room to grow, and lots of places where people can go into mortalities and gain experiences, and you know, I wouldn't mind being someone who might be unseen that's helping another person along someday. Now, my first wife and second wife and I, you know, both had before they died, they said, you know, hey, you know, we're going to be there for you. When you need us, we'll be there. Well, this has happened dozens and dozens of times. You know, like one time, you know, I woke up early in the morning. I was trucking out in western Oklahoma, and I called my wife, and I said, what's up? And she said, well, did you hear from the company? I said, no. I said, well, I saw Joanne last night. It's my first wife. And she said, oh, well, you know, my son was at Job Corps, and they thought he may have had a heart attack. So I knew something was up. And, you know, this happens on a regular basis. And whenever there's some kind of trouble or whenever I get down, Joanne and or Betty might come and see me. And the Hebrews call this, these kind of people zadiks, T-Z-A-D-I-K, and that's a word that Christians get, Hebrew word that Christians get saint from, and it's a
right.
It's a prearrangement that people can have with people that are past, that they can be, and I was really surprised to learn this, because basically the Catholics have got that right, you know, they pray to saints, and you know, that was something that went, whoa, they got that one right. So,
awesome.
And, yeah, I just want more responsibility and more trust so I can help people. That's just the way I am.
Right. Jamie asks, are
go
there
ahead.
Any...
Go ahead.
Jamie was just going to ask if there are any tribes still living in the old traditions in America.
Well, yeah, they're kind of scattered all over the place. Nowadays you really can't live traditionally, but you can be tradition minded. And there's still people that are dancing the dances. You know, people are starting to dance the ghost dance again. There's all kinds of opportunities out there. Sweat lodges are all over the world, and they're probably growing faster in Europe than they are here. And if you are respectful, and can get an invitation, and just go be with those people, and you know, go in the lodge, and lodge is a place to go and pray. In the Lakota way, now in the Cherokee way, we go in the lodge to be healed. But you know, either way. There are opportunities for people who are native or non-native to do it, to take part in ceremony. And I just want to caution people, don't pay to pray, because, you know, people have been warning about this for years, and now, you know, we've got this situation out in Sedona where people paid $10,000 to die. And it wasn't like they weren't warned.
Yeah. Let's do this relatively quick so I don't kill anybody else from the
sure.
questions. But what do you think the final decision of the Mayans were when they ended the calendar? Why did they do it then?
Boy, you're probably asking the wrong.
That's your question, Michael.
It's hard to know. I do know that the Mayan and the Cherokee, you know, both have that 270-day calendar, and
right.
I know there's something to it. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the Mayan calendar. If you go on my website, if you read about the experience that I had in spring solstice of '98, Creator told me that the year 2005 was going to be the year of the great havoc, because the weather was going to be so bad all over the world that may even shut down computers all over the planet. I was told to wake up and write that down. And I didn't realize until years and years later, you know, after Katrina happened and after my rabbi friend, you know, in November of 98 pointed out that, he said, that prophecy you were given, you know, is the most the fulfillment. It was the most detailed for fulfillment in 2,600 years. But I found out, you know, several years after that, that that spring solstice of 98 was the beginning of the week of 9-Ik, 9-I-K. And I didn't even know that was my Mayan day sign until Robert Three Eagles pointed it out to me in 2007. So there's something to it. I don't know how it works. I do know Robert Three Eagles taught me the Mayan way of going out and doing vision quest, but it involves knowing what your Mayan birthday is, and that birthday comes along every 270 days. You have to go out and do your vision quest on that day during the center of night, and it has to be in a special place. But there's ways of getting into your power and getting into your knowing of things. I believe some people are born kind of more hardwired than other people are. But I believe that door is open for anybody. It's just a matter of getting out and looking for it and really wanting it.
All right.
Go ahead, Chase.
We have another question from Sirius Star. Hey, girl. Holla. She wants to know, does Mr. Blue Otter know the sons of... I'm sorry. Chat room's going crazy, so I lost my question. I'm so sorry, guys. It's know the sons of the light and knew God first. Does Mr. Otter know the sons of the light knew God first? That's the question.
Do I know that?
Apparently, well, that's the question.
Well, yeah. I mean, the sons of light, I believe that the people at Qumran talked about that. And sons of light as opposed to sons of darkness. And there seems to be, the answer to the question is yes. Yes, of course. Without having, more of a question, I don't think I could give more of an answer.
I got one from Richard. He asked, I didn't think that there was a written Cherokee language until the Sequoia invented one in 1815 or so. If there were, and there went my thing away.
Well, let me tell you, that's a rumor. Actually, there was a book called Tell Them They Lie by Traveler Bird. It's a rare book. You can get a hold of one at maybe $100. But the Cherokee written language, we've had a system of scribes in a written language for thousands and thousands of years. There wasn't a business transaction or any kind of transaction or a speech or anything that wasn't written down, either on a piece of bark or a skin of corn or something. There was the Cherokee written language goes back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. It's nothing new. We now know the Mi'kmaq language was without the paleographers that looked at the Mi'kmaq language recently said, well, it's Reformed Egyptian. And, well, that's what the Book of Mormon says, it's Reformed Egyptian. And when you put the Mi'kmaq written symbols right next to the Book of Mormon symbols, they're identical. So, this is nothing new.
Exactly. IRN Sonic has a question. Do you think that maybe Bigfoot could be a hybrid creature of alien testing?
Possible. I mean, who knows? I do know that every Indian nation, the night before the big gun battle that ended up with Leonard Peltier being, a political prisoner, there was a Bigfoot. The Lakota call him Big Man, but if you read in the book Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, the people in the AIM camp heard one walking up the creek, which is 3 foot deep, and had it been a person, it would have waited, and they wouldn't have heard the splash, splash, splash. So whenever one of these shows up, there's going to be trouble. And all the Indians in the Northeast, they're told, hey, if you ever see one, close your eyes, don't make eye contact, walk away. The Mono Indians out west, if you ever see one, go downhill, they're going to go uphill, stay away from them. That's what we're told, and that's all I really know.
as far as them being alien, yeah, I don't know. I because they're so mysterious and no one's ever found a carcass. I mean, who knows what they're able to do? You know, Mad Bear Anderson reportedly could travel without his suitcase. And in the Hebrew tradition, you know, it's known that there are 72 people on Earth that can travel all over the Earth in the blink of an eye. So, you know, a Mad Bear could do it. Why not a Bigfoot?
Chase, he's on the Ishaway Trail, by the way, Mad Bear. So does that link anything with 516?
Well, only that parallel that, yeah. We have our nice little ley lines that tend
that's
to
right.
Found the yeah. Yes. We do have a caller. Caller, are you with us?
Yes, it's sad that your caller is your producer.
We love our producer.
But I just had a question. I recently learned about the Book of Mormon and how it actually ties into ancient aliens. Can you touch on that at all? Do you know anything about
well,
that?
Well, first of all, I want to say I joined the Mormon Church back in 1977. By 1985, I figured out that the church you know, basically doesn't practice anything that's in it. They've, you know, it's, I've got
Blue
a friend.
Otter, we're brother and sister then.
I've got a friend, Arlen Nussbaum, A-R-L-I-N, and N-U-S-B-A-U-M.com. He'll explain that whole thing to you, but you know, BibleUFO.com, you can go, it's either BibleUFO or UFOBible.com, you can see all the UFO evidence in the Bible, and there's a lot. As far as the Book of Mormon goes,
be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Blueotter speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony. So it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
You know, it's the way it was translated, it wasn't translated like some of the other records were, but there's definitely something there, you know, because the weights and measures system of the Indians in Guatemala, which is based on 2.5s, you know, it's still being used by the Indians of Guatemala, and the monetary system in Arabia was unknown. You know, when Joseph Smith was alive, you know, Egypt was known as the Orient, and there was no such thing as Egyptology. So there's something to it.
Well, and I like the whole thing about, you know, he was led to golden plates, and we're finding those all over the world right now. And he interpreted them because he was given a device. A seer stone. So, you know, and that's how he interpreted things.
Yeah.
And, of course, we all know Joseph Smith had a third-grade education. And
well,
the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, originally he had the Urim and Thummim, but because he was disobedient, those were taken from him.
Well,
and,
yeah.
He used a seer stone and a hat. And, you know, he would look in there, and a phrase would be given to him. And when that was written down properly, then another phrase would be given to him.
Right.
But, you know, we now know, you know, based on the
the symbols that he wrote down that were part of the I believe the Anthon manuscript are identical to the Mi'kmaq system. So, you know, we're starting to get scientific verification of that it really did exist, that the symbols existed and
right.
they were in use. And I'm not sure that answered your question, but...
Well, he still has that symbol that was never deciphered or decoded in the Book of Moses. You know what I'm talking about? It's
He has something called the Egyptian Manuscript
right.
and Grammar. Now, there's a book called Written by the Finger of God by Joe Sampson. If you can get a copy, it's $200.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Joseph Smith left behind, this is the... Basically, it was like a code, and you have to have a Hebrew. I can't remember the name of the. You have to know. Basically, Joseph Smith wrote down pairings of Hebrew symbols, and he gave like an encoded message where you see these two Hebrew letters put together. It means this, and that was something that Joe Sampson put together, and. But as far as the Book of Abraham, some of it's pretty well roundly been proven that he went beyond the mark, and you know, he was disobedient, and
yes, he was, and he lost.
1832, though, the church was told they were in condemnation, and that wasn't brought up again until 1986 when President Ezra Taft Benson talked about it. So,
right,
you know, they. And the Book of Mormon itself says that the Book of Mormon would come forth through the Gentiles, but the Gentiles would sin against the gospel, and it would be given back to the remnant of Jacob.
Right.
Which are, at some point, Hebrews did come over here and intermarried with people that were already here in the Americas.
Right, right. Richard has a question. The history of Sequoia's work on the syllabary seems so detailed. It seems so well documented. Scrolling. What is the evidence for an earlier writing system?
Well, I believe right now the Cherokee syllabary is like 86 characters. I understand they were like 92. But it wasn't just us that had a writing system. There were a lot of other Indian nations that had other systems, and you know, the Henderson runestone. I mean, there's different all kinds of writing systems, Ogham, lots of different systems all over the world that have been used by all kinds of different people. And you know, we basically just settled on the Arab system. That's the reason why there's kind of one system in the world, and it's more or less kind of coming around to English now. But there's all kinds of evidence out there of different syllabaries, and it's just not been talked about a lot because a lot of it's just been just plain suppressed.
Right. Dave Universe has a question. The Hopi Indian believe that a certain number of white buffalo are going to be born, and that will issue in a world event or change. How many have been born so far, and one was born recently, he believes?
That I really don't know about. To tell you the truth, I can't answer that question.
Okay.
I just can't answer that question.
Right. Richard has one. What was the evidence of earlier Cherokee writing systems that we were just talking about? I think he was wanting a little follow-up on that.
We've always seemed to have just used the syllabary. The evidence, you know, was that Sequoia's descendants stood up and said, "Hey, tell them they lie." You know, it is a lie that Sequoia invented it. He didn't invent it. The scribe system's been around for maybe 10,000 years. It's the way, you know, we've conducted business, and these facts were suppressed, and you know, for them to vehemently stand up and agree that the story that you're getting, including the so-called painting of Sequoia, that's not what he really looked like. You know, he was
was so vilified for doing what he did by the Cherokees that had been whited at the time that did not know about the system. They actually had him hunted down. They killed his wife. They cut off his ears. They cut off some of his fingers. He was persecuted, and because there was a split between the traditionalist faction of the Cherokees and the factions that wanted to become rich and became planters. Basically, the faction that followed John Ross were pretty much totally embraced white culture, and they were the bunch that walked the Trail of Tears. The traditionalists were already out in Arkansas and Missouri and Tennessee, and had already moved. You know, so there was a bunch that moved over here into Tennessee and Alabama in 1806. They knew it was coming, so they moved.
Right.
And it was the ones that stayed behind that suffered, walked the Trail of Tears. But they, you know, unless you're really familiar with the history. And even get into the suppressed histories, you don't really understand the transaction and what happened. But you know, if there's an evidence, you know, how old the system is. That's it. That the descendants of Sequoia stood up and said, "Hey, you know, the stories you're told, they're lies."
Okay.
Well, Jason, Michael, did you have anything? Before we sign off, or?
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of wrap this up.
Yeah.
You know, it would take a zillion more hours, I think. But where, in your understanding, do you think the current human race is going? Where do you think it's going to end up? When do you think it's going to end up? Do you think it's going to end and a new race will begin, or do you think we're a series of those?
Well, the Hopi say that the Hopi religion will, as it exists today, will cease, and something new will start. And I think the world's in for a big shakeup. I think I'm not sure who's going to live through it. I told my son, I said, "Hey, you know, learn as much as you can about low-tech things and how to get along, how to use tools. You know, learn from the Amish, learn from people that know how to get along without technology." And you know, I see us, you know, being taken back to an earlier time and. Maybe a tithe of a tithe surviving what's going to happen, but they'll start over again. And I know it doesn't sound encouraging, but I think that's the way we're headed. I really do.
Okay. Wow.
It's not something that sells. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. But do you think that the event, celestial event of December 21st next year, will be a kickoff, or do you think it'll be a culmination?
Boy, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I know something's coming. You know, it's like last night I dreamt that I used to live in Santa Monica, California, and, you know, I dreamed that I was on a bluff, you know, maybe, you know, 1,000 feet above the, you know, I was like above the Pacific Palisades, and I saw a big tsunami come in. It was a 500-foot wave, and, you know, it's not literal. When you're reading about tsunamis, you know, something's going to change.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation with someone who was there, I think things are going to change. I think the power centers of the world, you know, who knows what could happen? I mean, we're ripe for, you know, biological problems. We're ripe for the grid going down. We're just ripe for all kinds of things. And so, you know, I just recommend people, you know, figure out how to garden and how to harvest water, you know, out of thin air, you know, by using solar stills or whatever. Just learn some survival skills and get some food storage put in. and just get as ready as they possibly can, and not be scared. You know, it's like one of my professors at BYU said years ago: it only takes a couple of minutes to die. it'd be a brave new world if we get one. But you know, the Mayan elders have always said, "Hey, people, just wake up. You know, the birth pangs wouldn't be so hard." But you know,
no offense, but like you guys would know that. But
well, the week of the crash in 2008, you know, was the end of the 2,732 years decree in the Old Testament against the Northern Kingdom of Israel, and you know, instead of Western Europeans who are descendants of those tribes and descendants of Joseph's wife out of Egypt, instead of them getting closer to Israel, you know, because of Jews have been so vilified about the economy, and it's not them that are the problem, it's the Sabbatean Jews that are causing the problems, and they're no Jews at all. And so instead of drawing closer to Israel, you know, because of the financial problems, I saw an upswing of anti-Semitism, and I don't know. Everybody is just so concerned about their pocketbook instead of being concerned about their neighbor.
I heard a really good advice from somebody, and I actually, it may have even been one of our other amazing hosts on IRN, MJ, but he said the greatest investment is to invest in yourself.
Yeah.
That's where we need to be investing, your soul, making sure you're good, you know, good with the universe, good with humanity. And was that you, Michael, or MJ? I can't remember, but it was profound anyway. It definitely came from my group of friends. So
yeah, well, my friend Blue Frog Woman told me about a year ago, she said, you know, she said, you've been taking care of everybody else for all these years, time you start taking care of yourself.
Right.
So and I've done that kicking and screaming because I just have such a burden for people. But you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Right.
Very true.
Right.
That's
I appreciate.
True.
I don't know how much time, but I want to teach y'all a little bit of Cherokee. Gigayui means I love you in Cherokee. And I wanted to say Gigayui to everybody out there and. Call me anytime. We can do this anytime you want to.
Thank you very much. Thanks for spending the night with us.
You bet. I enjoyed it.
You betcha. We'll have you back on.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Chase?
Oh, my gosh.
It's been a pleasure.
Yes,
it has.
It's
been a pleasure, Chase. It's been wonderful, actually. So, everybody out there, I guess knowledge is the key to understanding. This was a classic show about that. You have to think about everything that was said and how that affects each individual. So everybody have a good evening and tune in to us next week. Thanks, Chase. Thanks, James.
What up?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files, in 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
Thank you.